Well, you may like to turn to Proverbs. Chapter 1, I'm just going to read a few verses from chapter 1 because I'll be referring to a number of different verses throughout the evening. So I'll just read a few verses from chapter 1 which are relevant. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. There will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, come along with us, let's lie in wait for someone's blood, let's waylay some harmless soul, let's swallow them alive, like the grave, and whole, like those who go down to the pit. We will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot with us, and we will share a common purse. My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths, for their feet rush upon for sin. They are swift to shed blood. How useless to spread a net in full view of all the birds. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They waylay only themselves. Such is the end of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the lives of those who get it. I'll leave it there. Now, 2 weeks ago, I started a mini series on parenting in Proverbs. There's an awful lot on parenting, bringing up children in Proverbs. And in fact, just as I've read that chapter, you'll see in a sense the whole book is aimed at that. It's aimed at young people. It's aimed at bringing up the young wisely. So in a sense, the whole book there is a manual not just for young people. Of course, we all benefit from it. We all need to refresh our minds in it. But it is a manual for wisdom, particularly for the young. So there's plenty of material here. Last time I looked at general responsibilities. We started with Ephesians chapter 6, and remembering what a child is, and basic issues about the child that made in the image of God and yet being a sinner. Some fundamental principles, example, love, authority given by God to parents. I suggested we distinguish between authority and influence, that the authority you have as a parent of young children is to try to, or one aspect of it is to try to increase influence, because as children get older and you won't be able directly to exercise authority over them in the same kind of way, but you will want influence over them, and so in the younger years you need to have developed influence. In a sense, as inverse proportion as your direct authority or the practice of direct authority, the imposition of direct authority goes down, influence should be increasing, so that as an adult your child will still hopefully look to you for help and advice, and there'll be that kind of influence there with them as they get older. I'm just going to look at methods of training, again a few guidelines from Proverbs, and then look at the kind of thing, what do you teach children? Again, look at using Proverbs. And again, firstly, in that methods of training children, the first place goes to example. Again, that's a primary principle of any leadership in any sphere. Proverbs 20 verse 7 suggests this: the righteous man leads a blameless life, blessed are his children after him. Suggesting that at least some of the blessing is due to being the child of a righteous
person, and we, you look back at your own lives, either as a child or as an adult, and isn't it often that what people were to you rather than what they said to you that actually stands out in your mind, that has the biggest impact on you? That certainly must be true of parents with their children. Secondly, affirmation and encouragement. Now, this sounds slightly kind of 21st century, but in fact, it's there I think to some extent in the Proverbs as well. We're very much into affirmation and encouragement these days, but I think there's an element of truth in it. Proverbs 23, verse 15. My son, if your heart is wise, then my heart will be glad. My inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. What's the picture there? The father speaking to his son, encouraging him and saying to the son the pleasure it gives him when the child behaves wisely and rightly. Now, you don't want to be doing it all the time, because if your method of upbringing is based on that, which some modern techniques are, then it becomes a kind of emotional blackmail if you're not careful. So, please please me and do good, and I'm so happy when you're righteous. But nonetheless, there is something here that within the right framework, joyful, it is pleasing to the parent when the child is behaving wisely, speaking what is right. Proverbs 23:24 is similar. The father of a righteous man has great joy. He who has a wise son delights in him. That's not quite so direct, but it's the same principle that their good things come to the father and or the mother through the child behaving rightly. And I think Proverbs 23:15 says there's nothing wrong in telling a child that, and for them to know that. Then there's the direction of a life. Proverbs 22, verse 6. This is where we started off 2 weeks ago. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. I discussed this briefly last time. To what extent is that an absolute promise? Or I think it's true that children will remember how they've been brought up. And in the Lord's mercy, that even if they seem to depart from it, there is always that possibility, you say, almost a probability, that at some point, in some way, they will return to it. They won't forget it. There's something there. Even if we're not saying that every child brought up in a Christian home is going to become a Christian, we can't say that. There is something there that will not be forgotten throughout their life, and you have to trust that as a promise of God. You train a child, you do your best with a child, in a sense you have to leave the outcome with the Lord, but that this is a wonderful promise here to parents who do bring up their child in the right way. Another aspect of training a child is verbal instruction and correction. And Proverbs 12, verse 1, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. It's important there to teach children. And the child who to understand discipline, to so that if they learn to love discipline, it's equivalent to loving knowledge. It will lead to growth in their lives. He who hates correction is stupid. Well, that's a pretty strong phrase, but I think it's true. Children need to be brought to understand why correction is a good thing for them. We adults do too, don't we? We need to be learned off very often to take correction at any stage in life. But certainly there with children, it's important. And Proverbs 13:1. A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a mocker does not listen to rebuke. So again, the importance of instruction, teaching children why they need to learn, why they need to seek wisdom, as Proverbs chapter 1 says. And of course, in the history of Israel, that the Jews were taught at Sinai, or at least on the plains when they were on the borders of the Promised Land, Moses instructs them, "These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." So instruction. And you wonder today how many homes is that true? Now, I hope in Christian homes there is instruction going on. Biblical instruction, the right way of living, but in other things as well. What Christianity has done in many cultures, and speaking of my own background, where in Wales, for example, the impact of the revivals in Wales in the 18th and 19th centuries led to an explosion of cultural interest. So the Christians not only learned to read, they educated themselves, but they learned to read not only the Bible, but it gave them a hunger for reading other books, for studying, and so Christianity became the birthplace of schools and universities and all this kind of thing. So, and this is true in many parts of the world as well. You can see that where Christianity takes off, education follows. So Christians should be people who love knowledge. You should be people who want to read. I'll plug this again. You should be people who want to read. Shouldn't be Christians who have no interest in life, particularly spiritual welfare. But I think generally a Christian should be interested in things because it's God's world. And reading brings you in touch with great minds of the past and the present who can help us to live and to understand life and to understand God. And of course that should be encouraged with children. Not everyone's going to be, everyone's going to be academic or intellectual. That isn't the point. You can have very, cultured people who are not really academic or intellectual, but they simply have an interest in wisdom and knowledge. And that should be the quality, I think, of Christian homes. But you wonder what is taking its place in the average, say, home these days. Television? Is that where children are learning all their stuff from? Yeah. Program after program? That's really the teaching tool, as I would suspect, in many homes. Or the internet, or Wikipedia, Google. And of course, they're school. That's fine. But the primary influence in children's lives should be the home. And then another method of training, if you want to call it that, is discipline and punishment. The Lord disciplines those he loves, as a father the son he delights in. So discipline is an aspect of love and an aspect of concern for a child. Proverbs 13:24, he who spares a rod hates his son, But he who loves him is careful to discipline him. And Proverbs 23:13, do not withhold punishment from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he will not die. So, I'll be looking at punishment, if not tonight, maybe another time. Anne Benton, in her helpful little book on parenting, says that discipline includes instruction, correction, modelling, in other words, being an example, and encouragement. Instruction, correction, example, and encouragement. In Ted Tripp, in Shepherding a Child's Heart, boils it all down to very broad things. He's communication and the rod. That's about it. So communication, and it's quite stark. So I'll come on to what we call punitive discipline a little later on. But you see, discipline in general includes far more than just punishing. It's instruction, as well as correction. It's example and encouragement. It's a way of bringing up children. Let's do something on what do you teach children? What do parents teach children? Well, firstly, to trust and fear the Lord. A lot of these in Proverbs. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5. Chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So that's the first thing a child needs to learn, to trust in the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, to trust and fear the Lord. This is really what Paul is saying in Ephesians. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Fathers, verse 4, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. I think I said that the training instruction, training is what you do with children. It's what their behavior. It includes punishment. Instruction is what you teach them. So there's both aspects there in that phrase, training and instruction, both together, upbringing. So you teach them basic principles, trust and fear the Lord. And they will pick that up from the kind of home you have. If you are someone who's doing that, and if you are someone who's showing that in your life, that you trust the Lord and that you fear the Lord. That's important. You trust the Lord, that you have a sense that He is in control, He leads you, you pray about issues, He guides you, you show that really you do a real trust, not just a nominal thing that you talk about on Sunday, but something that's really there in your life. I think children pick that up very quickly. They'll spot hypocrisy a mile off. But also a fear of the Lord, that there's a reverence in your home. It's not that it's gloomy or that it's severe, but that in your home there's a sense that the Lord is to be honoured. He is the head of the house. He is. And I think children pick that up. I was amused that I shouldn't use my own children. No, I won't do it. I'll forget that. Number two, to seek wisdom from God and His Word. To seek wisdom from God and His Word. That's the other thing. Teach them to love the Bible. That's important. And boy, can you get Bibles these days for children. Innumerable varieties. How do we ever cope? We only had one version. Bibles for 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 10-year-olds, all their pictures, all sorts. But the point is that you are teaching them to get wisdom from God and His Word. Get wisdom, get understanding, Proverbs 4:5. Do not forsake my words or swerve from them. Number three, to guard their minds carefully. Above all else, guard your heart, for it is a wellspring of life. That's, I mean, children have to grow into that, obviously. But you're teaching them that the life of the mind is important in their hearts, and what goes into it will be what comes out of it. Be careful about the influences that are on them. And one has to be very careful about this, because you're very aware, I'm sure, that the kind of things that influence lots of our families and children, internet and video games, and films, all sorts of things. And you have to keep an eye on children, the influences that are upon them. The fourth thing is to listen to and obey parents. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. It's a two-parent job, right? Father's instruction, your mother's teaching. That's fundamental. I shall be saying in a little while that one should expect obedience without challenge, delay, or excuse. Bring up children with no obedience, without challenge, delay, or excuse. It's interesting. I did say last time I've just done 3 out of 4 on this parenting class that I'm doing at St Mary's School. It's about boys, actually. It's particularly for the parents of boys. I've got 14 of us, and it's great fun. I'm enjoying it, and it's great. It's good to meet other parents. I don't think there's any other Christians there, as far as I'm aware, and. But what is noticeable all the time is that the lady who's leading it never teaches anything. Right? She facilitates. Right? She gets discussion going, and she gets things, and she always has a good suggestion, because everybody starts talking. There's always one or two who will talk more than anybody else, and you know exactly what's going on in their homes. I mean, I stay quiet, really, I don't know. But you know exactly what's going on. But she, in the end of the evening, you couldn't say that she anything. You couldn't pin anything on her to what she said, because all she's done is facilitate. It's very clever that she stays behind this kind of smoke screen everybody talking. But that's what she's there for, I suppose. She doesn't want to get sued, but the interesting thing is that. The whole basis of it is negotiation. Broadly speaking, that's it. Now, there is bound to be negotiation as children get older, and you've got to, that sort of thing. But the point is, from a very small age onward, it seems to be, as soon as children get into the habit of being able to say no or being... The reason the children do something is not because it's right and they should obey, but because in some way you've negotiated them into it. That's more or less what it's like. And this is what Hillary says, you see on the playground, and there's chaos. Mothers are trying to negotiate with 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds. And what's got lost altogether, it seems to me, with the Christian worldview, is a sense of parental authority. And with that, the idea that children do things not because it's attractive or it pays or it's profitable, but because it's right. So those two things, authority and obedience, because it's right. You do this because because I say so. Sometimes you have to say that to a child, and you should be able to give good reasons for why you say something. You don't just slap a child to do things without thinking. But there's no harm at some point to other children saying, if you do it because I say so. You teach them to grow up in an authority structure. That's a loving structure and all that as well. Goes without saying, I hope. But the idea today seems to be, we haven't got any authority. And there are people there who quite honestly seem to be in a panic because they can't cope with their 6-year-olds. And these are intelligent people. They can't. How do I get them to bed? What do I do? Well, anyway, if you've got an answer to that, you tell me, please. But no, it's interesting to see the difference. And what are you bringing up? You're bringing up a generation who, in a decade or two, will not be able to accept authority, it seems to me. They will simply bow to force, or they'll be trying to get what they can out of life. There will be very little sense of, we do this because it's right. And yet, and of course, when you think as a parent, you are in the place of God to your child. Don't forget that. You are God's bearer of authority to your child. You are there in the place of God, practically speaking, you are there. What is your child going to understand about the fear of God and obedience to God and trusting God? It's going to be very hard. Because God's going to, if they're going to negotiate with you as a parent, then basically they're going to be starting negotiating with God as well. So it's reflecting, of course, the culture we're in, which is where there is no fear of God, quite honestly. So children should listen to and obey parents. They should welcome and heed correction and rebuke. While welcome. A wise son heeds his father's instructions, but a mocker does not listen to rebuke. And there are plenty of little mockers, age 5, 6, and 7, in our schools. To choose their friends wisely as they grow up, well, this is important. He who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. You can talk to them about their friends. And that's an interesting thing, too, you know. Choose their friends wisely doesn't always mean choosing the rich ones, the ones with nice homes, the influential ones, and you know the ones who are going to get your parents, your kids up in the world. But it's the friends that are actually going to be good for them in a moral sense and if possible a spiritual sense. If sinners entice you, do not give in to them. We read that in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. It's interesting for adults too, actually. Many people will come into your life, but you can do something to choose friends. Do you think about that? Teach them to watch their words. Proverbs 12:18. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Well, we've done enough about words of Proverbs over the last few weeks and months. The next thing is to care for other people. We can teach them to that. Whoever is kind to the needy honors God. Proverbs 14, verse 31. To avoid harmful situations. Chapter 2, verses 12 to 18. Wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men. It will save you also from the adulteress. Do not join with those who drink too much wine or gorge themselves on meat. Now, most of us would say, don't join with those who drink too much wine, but how many of us would teach them not to gorge themselves on meat as well? In other words, there's gluttony as well as drunkenness can be a danger. To manage their anger well, better a patient man than a warrior. How about that? You know, you've got that sort of, they love little warriors, don't they? Better a patient man than a warrior, but you can't get little models of patient men. They're all sort of they're all warriors. To work well and avoid laziness. Well, of course, from the moment they start getting schoolwork, you start teaching them that. And to be honest and truthful. The Lord detests lying lips. And that is important. The importance of truth is one thing I use it myself. I am very strict on it. Is on telling the truth. Absolute truth. I mean, it's very easy for little children to start, you know, they tell little fantasies and they make little things and they make little, you know, stories up and things like that. Within their range of understanding as appropriate to what they're trying to do, you understand them. But it is so important that children learn to tell the truth. truth, because we're living in a world where that is not honoured, really. Hear very often of people telling lies in job applications, for example, not seem to think there's much wrong with it. You get what you can out of life. It's not wrong to deceive. But we serve a God who does not lie, and we should be very firm on the truth. Correction and corrective discipline, looking at corrective issues. Some of this is what I call tentative advice, or rather than biblical principles. So the Bible doesn't give us a detailed program of how to bring up your children. It gives you principles. And I think Christians must exercise a certain amount of freedom and biblical common sense in how they actually do that. But when children misbehave, they can misbehave for different reasons. Yes, the fact that they're sinners is at the back of it all. But then we are sinners too, and we have a certain authority still to deal with the children. What may cause children to misbehave in specific issues? Maybe it's to get attention. Right? Well, maybe they just need to be taught not to seek attention. Maybe, knowing your child, they need to be given a bit more attention, perhaps in a different way. So you've got to look at that. Maybe they misbehave to challenge authority. You set a boundary, they're going to break it. You give them a rule, they're going to smash against it. So you've got to make sure you set the boundaries in the right places and not budge. They may simply be angry. It's often, and a number of folk at this parenting course have said that, and we found it actually too, that the lads behave particularly badly just after school. Maybe you, those of you who are parents, you've had children of that age, you've noticed this as well. Just after school, they seem to want to get things out of their system, and they'll come up to mum. And, you know, they'll fling the bag, and then they want to go and play, and they'll run off, and they just have that little bit of, rebellion in them just after school. Other times they won't be, but it's a general trend, and quite a lot of parents said, this is it. Or when they come home, that first hour or so at home can be difficult. Thankfully, I'm not there. Hillary's with them, so I just cope with it. But, when they are at home. So you have to understand that, but also deal with it firmly. Of course, you don't put up with bad behaviour, but you do help to try to understand the reasons behind it. They may show off in front of friends, of course. That's a popular one, isn't it? They want to win a friend's approval. And you need to be firm there and, in the end, make them want your approval more than they want their friend's approval. And sometimes they misbehave when they're out of their depth. If children are just overwhelmed, perhaps emotionally by something, I think sometimes at parties, children can be overwhelmed. There's just too many people there, it's too exciting, and they're too much the centre of attention, and they can misbehave then, or they've got too many choices at meal times, or, what am I going to do? And so there's this kind of misbehaviour and clowning around because they're just out of their depth in a situation and they don't know quite what to do, and you have to try to understand as well. So there's a lot of things to look at, many other reasons. How do you deal with bad behaviour? Firstly, it has to be confronted. It appears that Eli failed to do this with his sons in 1 Samuel chapter 2:22-25. There appears to be some indication that Eli, for example, um, He heard about everything his sons were doing with Israel, how they slept with the women. He said to them, "Why do you do such things? I hear from all the people about these wicked deeds of yours. No, my son, it's not a good report." Well, you suspect that something hadn't gone on, you know, terribly well before, but nonetheless, he speaks to them. He doesn't really appear to deal with them very firmly, although as the priest he has authority to do it. David with Adonijah is said to have never said, "Why are you doing such a thing?" He doesn't seem to have ever confronted Adonijah. 1 Kings 1:5-6. The indication is that even the Adonijah really was a bit spoiled. So bad behavior needs to be confronted. And the basis and purpose of good discipline is understanding. The child needs to learn, why is what I did wrong? We had a discussion about 2 weeks ago on discipline and at this group, and she gave out a sheet which had, you know, positive behaviour, positive ways of dealing with situations, negative ways of dealing with situations. Under negative was, of course, smacking, you see. Because that's the only way, really, these people see smacking is negative. Because, you know, smacking is always the end of the parent's tether, really. That's all they could see smacking as a kind of negative thing, that when you've lost it, you smack and that's it. You see. So I they just said, "Well, any comments?" So I sort of, you know, sucked up, crying. I said, "Well, actually, I think there is a more positive place for smacking." I said, "I think if it's in the context of love, and I think when a child has done wrong, you can explain to them why you are going to do what you're going to do. You can say how often you're going to smack them, or how many slaps, or how many strokes, or whatever you do. And then afterwards, you can show that you love them, you know, give them a cuddle or a hug." But in that context, it's not done out of anger. It's not just the last resort. It is an integral part of proper discipline, bringing up children. But I did emphasize the boy, has to understand why you've done it. So that they know what the issues are. I didn't know, they want to respond. I said, "Well, what kind of things do you smack for then?" Someone said, "I don't know." And then someone else said, "Well, lady, so why can't you achieve, could you not achieve the same purpose just by saying, well, refusing to speak to them for a day?" So I said, "Well, is the fact that his bottom stinks for 15, 20 minutes afterwards, which is worse, that or the fact that I inflict possibly untold emotional harm, as well as virtual impracticability of not talking to your child for a day, by having this kind of embargo on speaking?" But there's this kind of huge allergic reaction to anything physical, that it must be abuse. But they seem to be not as sensitive to emotional or psychological harm. It's very strange, the way that people think it was so inured by this idea that anything physical has got to be violence. This emotive word, it's violence, or it's hitting, or it's, you know, abuse. And yet they're quite prepared to countenance something which I think is probably far more ludicrous. How can, you know. But the thing about smack, it's done, it's over with, you go on with life, you know. So I'll talk a little bit about that. Perhaps, I'm only doing one more of these parenting classes. I'm sorry for you who have got no interest at all in parenting. It's going to be very boring. But I'm just going to do one more of these next week, and then I'll finish them. The understanding has to be there. You can turn a behaviour crisis into a learning opportunity. At times, of course, there may be other aspects that they may have to make restitution. When I was a lad, I remember playing tennis against the wall of the church. My father was a minister, and the inevitable happened. The tennis ball went through the window, you know, of the church. I think I had docked some pocket money or something like that. But also, you must listen to the child, be fair to him, little her. Don't jump to conclusions. Listen to them. Be fair to them. Rules of natural justice. Expect obedience too, without challenge, delay, and excuse. That is important. It may sound almost unattainable, but start young and tell them that when you say, when you tell them to do something, they do it. You don't have to tell them a second, third, or fourth time. Any practice, of course, something. But reality is, it doesn't mean do it in 5 minutes' time when you're ready. You do it now, and there's no excuses. So the fundamental issue of obedience that is immediate. Now, it then behoves you as a parent to be able to apply that reasonably. If a child is genuine in the middle of doing something again, say, well, will you do it in 2 minutes when you finish that? Don't wrench them away from something they're doing or their middle of their homework or, something they could reasonably be expected to want to finish. I think that behoves you as a parent to know when it's reasonable. Build in the slack. Don't say, oh, can you just do it? Okay, we'll do it in 2 minutes then. Because if you've already lost it, if you start negotiating. But give them the slack. Say, do it in 2 minutes time. I want you in bed in 5 minutes. And with our particular boy, did a little bit of time in the bath. And so if I used to say, right, I want you out of the bath now. Because I do the bath with them. And I want you out of the bath now. Oh, Dad, can I have 2 minutes? And Thomas would always come up with this ludicrous, can I have 6.5 minutes, please, Dad? He hasn't got a clue how long 6.5 minutes is, but he said, that's what he said. But I'd say, no. But if I said to them, if I do now, you've got 2 more minutes, okay? It's much better. Because they can cope with that. They can work their way down. And when I say then, all right, now your time's up, it's much easier. So I think you have to learn to set the limits sensibly as a parent, but when you say something's to be done, you do it. Okay, that's how it happens. And then finally, just deciding on focuses. How do you choose what issues you're going to deal with? Now, the end of the class last week, the lady was saying, for punishments, you always give tasks. You don't take things away from them. You give something to them. Well, I'm not convinced. I suppose giving tasks can be an appropriate form of punishment. But I think there is, Anne Benson has some good comments on how to establish things. For example, going to bed. She says establish the focus. This is how we are going to do bedtime from now on. Secondly, explain the focus. In other words, why that's necessary. But in the end, it's because I say so. Enact the focus so the child knows what to do. Go through it with them one night and, this is how we're going to. And of course, stick to it yourself as well. You've got to stick to the rules you make. And then finally, enforce the focus. If they're really disobedient, then bring in the sanctions. So it's that kind of how you deal with children reasonably, establish what you want them to do, explain why as far as you can, but in the end, it's because they've got to do it. You work it through with them so they know what to do, and then finally, yes, there are sanctions if they don't. They don't do it. But in the end, what you're still talking about is parenting that is consistent, isn't it? Consistent parenting, that's so important. It's fair to all the children, and it's firm. You set boundaries, which children so much need, and you stick to them. Then, punishments, and I'll come on to that. And the issue of corporal punishment, do that a bit next time.